Mini-episode 1685 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini, episode 1685. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you. And we have yet another football segment we're doing on the show. This one is going to be a breakdown of the closing days of the NFL season here, the stretch run, taking a look, as we sometimes do, at this point in the NFL season, and bringing back in with us here one of our FDH Lounge dignitaries we've talked a decent amount of football with since 2021, Derek Joseph, to talk about this, getting him back on the show. We've had him on a little bit earlier on to break down some of these things here and take a look at the landscape. And one of the resources that we're going to be making use of here today, you can find it on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. Right there at the top, it's our 2023 FDH NFL stretch run breakdown right there on the homepage. And that will be a reference point for us here as we're looking at this for any surprises that the formula gave us, some things that maybe are unsurprising, and just our general state of affairs heading down the stretch. So, Derek, good to have you on here, and good to be breaking it down with you again.
Yeah, happy to be here. Feeling a little under the weather, like I'm sure a lot of people are right now. But, you know, we're going to power through because football is more important than anything.
Truly appreciate that. And out of gratitude, as per always, I got to get the plug here that I know that you would want me to get in for you here. With your better half, the lovely now Mrs. Derek, Maya Master, and you can find her on Twitter at Chaotic Goodest, and check out the link tree. Check out all of the links there, and you will see why we have been so high on her upside and everything like that ever since she first came on our radar. Somebody who is truly going to rule the world, and hopefully we'll remember the name Rick Morris when she does. But now that I got the obligatory plug out of the way here, Derek, again, gratitude for coming on and powering through under the circumstances. And, you know, we could perhaps draw an analogy between the way that you're feeling right now and perhaps the overall NFL slate as far as what we're looking at here this year. Because I was saying to you off air that, like, I'm very unimpressed with even the top teams. They just seem a little bit less mid to me than some of the other teams. And it's an odd year overall. Now, one of the things that I did take a look at is, because I had a little bit of a curiosity factor with our power rankings. And last year, so in 2022, there were 22 teams where there was a difference of 10 or greater spots between their high point and their low point in the weekly power rankings during the season. As of a couple weeks ago, it was only 12 teams. Now it's up to 15. And I think in a lot of cases, injuries are playing a key role in that. You can understand why Cincinnati is one of those teams, for example, with Joe Burrow, why they would be 10 points in the power rankings below what their height had been at one point. But on the one hand, it's a year where you have less movement, less wild movement in our weekly power rankings from week to week and even through the course of a season. And most of the teams that are in the playoff race, most but not all, are teams that we thought were going to be in the playoff race coming into the season. But it's just a thing where you look at some of the presumptive Super Bowl favorites as we've been going through the season here. Kansas City and Philly, I had penciled that in for a rematch all the way along. Neither of them is looking particularly great, but they could still be there. Everybody was writing off Buffalo a couple weeks ago, and understandably so. They've come back strong, but you still have questions about them. Like, questions about even the top teams. To me, that's a theme right now, because we're not used to saying that about the top teams at this point, I don't think, Derek.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, it's that usual murderer's row at the top, like you said, but it's kind of what we're talking about off air. It's going to be really interesting how the kind of wild cards pan out. I mean, you look at your third tier has about, I think, half the league on the FDH rankings. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of those teams are in position, or, you know, they have, with the way the league has been this year, a lot of those teams have a good shot, I think, at least making it to the divisional round. And then, you know, a couple good bounces go their way, and you never know what happens. And then obviously injuries have been extremely common this year. One thing we didn't talk about that off air that I think is, I hope doesn't play a factor in the playoffs, but it's played a factor in the year this season so far, has been officiating. Seen a lot of games go weird ways. I don't know if it's just league pressure, if it's, you know, if you want to put on your tinfoil hat and think that the league wants certain teams to go a certain way. I mean, you can go a variety of different ways, but I mean, I think the officiating, the injuries, it's been an odd season for sure.
It has been. No question about that. The injuries, again, they've been a real killjoy factor here as far as taking some of the top players in the league out of it. And it just seems like week by week it continues to add up. And it's one of these things where among the top teams, you look at a circumstance here, and I have to laugh going into this weekend here. The Miami Dolphins, my 1A team that has been elevated to 1 for as long as Deshaun Watson is wearing a Browns uniform. So I have had a lot of fun over the last two seasons rooting for Miami, and I should be riding high right now. This is a team that has a chance to get the number one seed in the AFC. But again, can't beat anybody with a winning record. And so something you know about in your household, Derek, is Dallas Cowboy fandom. We got that game here this weekend for bragging rights, and it's a thing. I'm just thinking of the Spider-Man pointing meme, because it's like, this game's going to end in like a 10-10 tie, right? Because neither team could beat a team with a winning record. This one's going to be a fairly pathetic tie. I just have that feeling.
Yeah, that's going to be, it's going to be interesting how that one shakes out. And I mean, the thing with both those teams, and another common thread across the league, is there hasn't, you know, especially since now the MVP race is starting to, people are talking about it more, it's becoming a bigger storyline. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong here, but I haven't seen any quarterback play that I think has been outstanding this year. There's obviously been great quarterbacks, you know, there's been bad quarterbacks, there's been injuries, I get it. But, I mean, you know, in the past few years you had, you know, the Burrow, Allen, Mahomes. Last year, you know, you had Hurts. You had those kind of cream of the crop guys. And they're obviously all still playing with the exception of Burrow's hurt. But, I mean, no one's really having some, you know, record-setting year. And, you know, I don't know if the defenses are just, I mean, I imagine the defenses have just been, you know, they're scheming better. They know these quarterbacks better. They know the offense is better. You know, I don't think it's been the same offensive output we've seen, with obviously some exceptions like Miami. But the highest offensive output games we've seen this year have been, like we kind of talked about, great teams like a Dallas and a Miami against bad teams. So this is a year in recent years more so that I think, you know, defense wins championships is going to come into play. And I think that's kind of the reason Baltimore is so high, and obviously San Francisco, but those two teams are kind of, they're consistent enough on offense and they both have great defenses. So if it comes down to defense, I mean, I think everybody's pretty much right. One of those two teams are the perennial favorites for the Super Bowl. But I'm curious, kind of what are you seeing defensive wise?
Well, it's an interesting thing. You mentioned those two teams, and those are actually, for anybody that's reading that breakdown on fantasydraftkills.com, again, right there at the top of the main page. Those are my two teams to make the Super Bowl. A rematch of the Harbaugh Bowl, even though it'll be just the one-half Harbaugh Bowl this time around. But what's fascinating to me is, and this is the kind of thing I'm sure that grabbed your eye, because I know you look at these things here, that for Baltimore, you've got the DSRS, which, again, that is the proprietary stat for on profootballreference.com. Excellent resource site there. So we don't know what's in their formula. It's a proprietary formula, but figure that it's basically their sort of stew to kind of capture the best of that. They're 1, and San Francisco is 2. Defensive yards per play, Baltimore 1, San Francisco 10. Okay, a little wider there. Third down defense, Baltimore 5th, San Francisco 22nd. So that's a thing where we don't kind of tend to think of that with the 49ers, but they've had, and again, they did make some trades before the deadline here that have stiffened up that defense a little bit. So it could be a little bit of a lagging indicator. But you see something like that, and it makes you think that that's a defense that may have a little bit of trouble getting off the field from time to time here. They clearly didn't when they played Dallas and Philadelphia. They were able to dispose of both of them, especially in the case of Philadelphia, I would say surprisingly well. But Baltimore is a team that grades out very good in all of those conventional metrics. San Francisco, pretty good, but not quite on the same level. I will say this, because I know that you always get a laugh out of things like this, what some of the honks on radio will be saying, that after a couple of weeks, on a Sunday morning as I'm in the car and listening to some of the drivel about comparing this defense with the Browns to the 85 Bears and the 2000 Ravens, I mean, this is clearly the second best defense in the division. You might even say third based on Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh's pretty overrated top to bottom, but there's a case to be made they might be better than the Browns defense. So I would have to think, Derek, that one of the predicates for being as good as the 85 or 2000 teams that I mentioned would be that you'd be the best team in your own division or conference or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. My pushback would be, I think the divisional play, you kind of see the most outliers in the sense that they play each other twice a year. They play each other every year twice a year. So those coaches are going to know each other, and they're going to know how to scheme each other. So I mean, it's an interesting point, but I don't know how much total stock I want to put in you got to have the most outstanding defense in your division, but it's certainly interesting.
Well, if you're a team for the ages, Derek, I mean, if you're being compared to the greatest defenses of all time, you should be first in your division, yes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we can agree on that much anyways. I mean, you know, if you're going to be compared to the 85 Bears or the 2000 Ravens, and I get it, hyperbole is never in short supply in any of the local markets, and, you do kind of tend to get that from time to time. But it's one of those things where, again, even a team like the Browns, I mean, they're a good example of it. 9-5, despite being, thoroughly mediocre in a lot of ways offensively throughout the course of the season. Now, there have been peaks and valleys, and one of the peaks has come since Joe Flacco has come in, of course. And the running game being able to replace Chubb, not a complete surprise, because if you were watching this team, you knew how good Ford was. He's got good speed. Hunt had something left in the barrel. I don't know exactly how much, but he's had enough to be able to get things done here. So, I mean, a little bit unsurprising that they've been able to have some of the peaks that they have. Equally unsurprising that they had the valleys that they had when P.J. Walker was in there and some of the guys earlier on. But it's a thing where when you've got a team like that that is looking pretty likely to get in the playoffs right now, and young teams like Houston and Indianapolis that are right there in the mix. And as I said to you off air, I had called it before the season on our AFC South preview, those two teams were going to be better than anybody thought. But I'm thinking like 8 wins at the peak, basically, when everybody in the world was saying 3 or 4 or 5, and they might be even better than that at this point. So it's just an odd landscape when you consider the number of teams that are really still in it at this point. Even Green Bay, as badly as they shat the bed last week, I mean, if they were to win out, they could be right back in it. It's very, very, very odd. And it's a sign, again, that I think clearly the NFL, in the name of greed, overextended the playoffs here. We don't need 7 teams per conference. There's a case to be made in the NFC. We should probably go back to 5.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. More teams in the playoffs, the better. I mean, it gives you the chance for those crazy upsets. I mean, the more teams there, the better. I mean, we saw that discourse, you know, painfully over in the college world a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
But I mean, a lot of these fringe teams in the NFL, I think have a good shot. I think Detroit has a really good shot. If they can tighten things up on defensively, that offense is good enough. I think they can play with anybody. And then, you know, you get some playoff magic with, I mean, I don't think the Bucs could beat anybody, but you never know. But, I mean, it's a cool year in terms of you have these French teams. I mean, you keep, I know Cleveland, you're a Cleveland guy, so we're going to go back to Cleveland. But, yeah. I mean, that's a fun story. You could get Flacco in there. I mean, maybe you can get a conference championship with Baltimore and Cleveland, Joe Flacco knocking down his old team. So, I mean, from a storyline perspective, it's interesting. I like the expanded playoffs. But, I mean, your predictions, obviously, San Francisco over Baltimore in the Super Bowl. But if you had to pick, a fringe wild card team that could get to the Super Bowl on both, AFC and NFC side, I'm curious who your two would be.
Oh, that's interesting, because the Browns are going to get in all likelihood with the best record of the wild cards in the AFC, but I have a hard time seeing it. This feels like a cheat, but it's within the realm of what you asked me. I'm going to say the team that I think is going to be the number six seed, Buffalo, in the AFC. I've already got them winning. As much as it rips at my soul to pick them over the Dolphins, I mean, how can I not? I mean, the one time they played the Dolphins, they lit them up. And again, I need to see Miami beat a good team, and I'll be certainly hoping for it over the weekend and wearing my Dolphins gear. But Buffalo, in all likelihood, going to get in as a wild card team. So as much as it feels like a cheat because they are one of the traditional powers of the AFC in the last couple of years, I guess I'm entitled under the circumstances to pick them according to your criteria. A little more tricky in the NFC. I will say, in looking at this here, I don't kind of exactly know why, because the eye test doesn't line up with it. But as I'm sure you noted on the breakdown here, biggest riser since the midway point of the season, the LA Rams, 10 spots. So they, again, defensively, I guess maybe that's been one of the differences. They've kind of risen to being mediocre defensively, and they're still good offensively. And, again, I don't know if I see them. They're going to have to go on the road an awful lot to do it, but more so than Seattle. Although, you know what? I'm going to do the same thing here. This is kind of funny. In the end, I'm going to go with Dallas, because it's a thing where, and I can only imagine how much this might piss off all
they're
the Cowboys.
They're not going to be wild cards. It's cheating.
Well, hey, they're going to be the 5 seed, probably. I think with the remaining schedule, I think Philly's still going to take the division. You know what? And this is a thing. Here's something for all the Cowboy fans in the world to put me on the dartboard. In a year where basically all the top teams are mid, that would be the year that you would think a Jerry Jones team could slip through. So there we go. Buffalo and Dallas. And boy, oh boy, after what we saw last weekend, maybe not a rematch the Cowboy fans would want. At least it'll be on a neutral field this time, huh?
That's true. You got Vegas. That's a quick. That's basically a home game for Dallas. I don't think that's too much of a flight. That's interesting. The teams you picked. I alluded to it before, but Detroit is my number one. Mm-hmm. I know they're. I'm breaking my own rule because that's cheating. So I guess I can't go with Detroit. But if we're going off of not your usual suspects, it's Detroit. But if we're going off of who's kind of sitting in that wild card role, I refuse to say LA mm-hmm. as a divisional rival.
How about Seattle?
Gosh. It's tough. I mean, the Lions were kind of, I got an early future on them at +2900 that first game where they beat the Chiefs. So
that's awesome.
I have a secret desire for them to get there all the way. AFC wise, I think the Bills are it breaks the spirit of it, but I do agree with you. Houston would have been mine. I don't know how long Stroud is out. I want to say he another week or two. I haven't looked at that injury report lately, but with a healthy Houston, I know they lost Tank Dell too. Which kind of throws a wrench into this, but I think a healthy Houston team, I had them shocking everybody. I think CJ Stroud's going to be a problem in the league for a long time. And I think he's going to float quickly to the top or near the top of that pantheon of AFC, stud quarterbacks, with Mahomes and Burrow and Allen and Lamar. So I'll stick with Houston here. Houston, I think, has an interesting shot there. I know they're banged up, but You know, there's still a few weeks left, people to get healthy, and other teams to lose top people to injuries. I hope, I don't wish for injuries to anybody, but, you know, it's injuries are gonna you know, play a big factor.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, I'll be happy for you if that Detroit ticket cashes, but it's a thing where it'll be a little bit more dire for me if it does, because on this show, my man Chris Galloway previously extracting a pledge from me as the world's probably only continuous Jared Goff apologist all the way through history here, going back to 2016 when I was trying to popularize the phrase, turn your head and cough for Goff, in the draft for the Browns there, to no avail. But again, he extracted from me a pledge that if they win the Super Bowl, I will get a tattoo of the Lombardi Trophy in his face on my ass. So, you know,
it's
going to be a less fun day in my household than it'll be in yours if that happens. So, you know, as the needle is digging into me, I'll try and think of how happy I am for you hitting that plus 2900 ticket. But, you know, it could happen. Again, stranger things have happened. Look, if a team like Dallas or Detroit or somebody like that's going to slip through, I mean, maybe it ends up being in this chaos theory kind of a year where even the really good teams aren't that really good. I mean, San Francisco right now, everybody's acting like they got a hammer lock on things in the NFC, if not the NFL. Hello, remember midseason when everybody was writing them off? They had that three-game losing streak. They looked like ass. I mean, it's one of those things where we're just supposed to forget what happened in the recent past here. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, Super Bowl teams all go through a trough period. I think like the aforementioned 2000 Ravens, didn't they have like 5 weeks in a row of like not scoring a touchdown? I mean, I guess that's an extreme outlier, but you don't generally have the prolonged periods of time or the repeated periods of time that some of the teams at the top have looked bad this year. And it's one of those things where I talked about this coming into the year because I kind of laughed about it that you guys ended up hiring Cleveland's own Jonathan Gannon there as your head coach. I was laughing about that at the time. Like, what, did Philly leave him behind after the Super Bowl because they were pissed off at him? They had stranded him there. But, you know, I noted coming into the year, I picked Philly to win the NFC, but I was like, well, they are replacing both their coordinators. That is something to keep an eye on. What's interesting is, didn't seem to be an issue early on. I thought if it bit them early on, Derek, it'd be in the first month or two. But, like, especially defensively, it appears to be getting worse as it goes along here. I'm like, how the hell can that be part of your transition to a new coordinator? All the bumps in the road should have, if they were going to be out of the way this year, they should have been out of the way in the first half of the season.
It's interesting because that's the same thing. I meant to bring it up earlier when you were talking about DSRS with San Francisco, because mm-hmm. they have a new coordinator as well.
Yes.
You know, losing D'Amico Ryans to Houston, and I don't have the highest opinion of Steve, or I believe it's Steve Wilkes.
Yes.
And, you know, I think the coordinator carousel affected them as well, because they, I mean, they have the guys, and I know they picked up even more guys before the trade deadline. So, but it's interesting, the difference I see with San Francisco and that losing streak they had is they are a house of cards in the sense that you take out, you know, they lose, I believe that those three games, they didn't have Debo, they didn't have McCaffrey, and they didn't have Trent Williams, which right. I get it. Those are three of probably the, Debo is kind of unique in the sense that he's a, in that offense, he's key, but
yes.
You know, those are two of some of the best players at their position in the league. But I mean, you lose those three players and they can't really do anything. So it's San Francisco, and then obviously we saw, you know, they lose Purdy in the conference championship last year and sort of fall apart. So as great as San Francisco has looked this year, I still see them as a house card in the sense that injury will affect them worse, I think, besides losing, you know, like a quarterback. But if any team, San Francisco loses, you know, some of their key people, and that whole team just collapses. It's fascinating the way it affects them comparatively to some of the other teams.
Yes, and I want to come back to D'Amico Ryans in a minute here because you made me think of something when you mentioned that. But as far as it goes with San Francisco, this is one of these deals now where as much as everybody was crapping on Brock Purdy when they hit that trough, and justifiably so, he wasn't looking good at the time. But it was a thing where, I think it was a matter of putting him on too big of a pedestal before that, because he is essentially, again, a system quarterback, a game manager, etc. And now he's getting all this run for MVP, I think largely in the void of what you talked about before. What other quarterback candidates are there? There's really not anybody. And, oh, got to give it to a quarterback no matter what. But you're looking at a situation where he's certainly behind CMC in his own offense here. Maybe Trent Williams too, but we don't give MVP to offensive linemen under any circumstances. But I mean, for a guy who's no better than the second best player on his own offense and probably more like third or fourth or somewhere in there, how the hell do you end up being MVP of the league?
Yeah, no, I think I don't see a world where that happens. I mean, if we're talking about MVP, I do think it's Tyreek Hill. I mean, you place that man anywhere and he elevates the entire team. To me, that is the MVP. Will he get it? Maybe if he hits 2,000 yards. I don't know. I think they're going to focus more on numbers there. But I mean, while we're on this thread of quarterbacks and you know, some faltering teams, before I know you wanted to pull a thread on DeMeco Ryans. Yeah. I do want to talk about Kansas City, and not just because of Taylor Swift. Kansas City has had, despite them still being, you know, in that top playoff conversation, they've had a rough year. And, you know, there was a few games where the officiating turned it their way. I mean, or turned it their way and turned it against their way. And we saw it recently with that lateral, and we saw it back in the Jets game a few weeks ago. But I don't know. They're going through an interesting problem, because obviously they didn't have Tyreek last year and they still look pretty good. But
right. With
the exception of Kelsey this year, they have just been awful in the receiver world.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how that'll kind of come into play come the playoffs. If Mahomes and Kelsey can really just carry them through. Obviously, I know the rest of the team's pretty good. They have a pretty stout defense. But Kansas City, I know Mahomes is still probably the greatest quarterback in the league right now. But I don't know if they can carry through, you know, with the offensive output they've had in the playoffs without, you know, a real true number one or even a true number two receiver.
Agreed, especially if they have to play Baltimore, because that defense is going to shut them down. This is a thing where, again, Rashee Rice, they are getting something out of him, but he's basically being forced to be a WR1 by default, which is unfair to put on any rookie. And particularly a rookie who, I mean, not a low pedigree rookie, but not a high pedigree rookie either. He wasn't like a guy that went in the top 10 or top 15 of the draft. Their arrogance the last couple of years, and especially since letting go of Tyreek Hill, like, we can bring in any cast-offs from Green Bay or Pittsburgh or wherever, like, it's ridiculous. They are paying for their own arrogance. I've never seen a team that loves the smell of its own farts as much as them when it comes to that offense, and they're paying a price for it. They are really, really bad in that receiving core, and you saw in the opener. I mean, they're dead meat, maybe even in the first round, if anything was to happen to Kelsey. You saw what happened when they didn't have him against Detroit. Now, there's no reason to think that that's not going to be the case, that they're not going to have him all the way through, but they're way too dependent on one player there for a team that's supposed to be a legitimate Super Bowl contender, I think. You can't just be relying on one target as much as they are. That's just not realistic. And, you know, there was a game a couple weeks ago, I don't remember which one, might have been when Denver shocked them. Somebody was just doubling him relentlessly, and I think that was the game. And it was just like, ugh, you better hope nobody else was taking notes on that.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see how they do down the stretch. And then while we're on that topic of, you know, perennial favorites from last year, I am curious about your take with Philly, because, you know, you had them at 10 in your third tier on the rankings there. They really didn't lose that many people. They still have that same offense. They're still doing similar things, but they've struggled a lot this year. So I'm curious kind of what you're seeing with Philadelphia and why they've kind of fallen down the totem pole a little bit this year.
Well, and I've got them seventh in the weekly power rankings, which is by far the lowest I've had them through the course of the year. I don't have it right in front of me at the moment. I don't think I've had them lower than third. I think they've been first or second or third the whole year. And I just couldn't ignore it anymore. the way that they're looking now, this losing streak that they're on. And if I was to put my eye on anything, and this is one of the things that I'm proud of with coming up with this formula here for the stretch run breakdown. This is a formula that, again, we do it at run at a couple points during the season. We'll run it again when the season's done. Sometimes there's something that just jumps off the page at you, and it perhaps illuminates something that, like, we couldn't quite put our finger on. And in this case, Philly, as I'm sure you noticed, 32nd in third down defense. That's a problem. I mean, that's, you got, it's a good defense. Unfortunately, I can say, I mean, it made me physically ill watching what they did to my Dolphins earlier in the season, but where's that defense been the rest of the year? You know what I mean? How did that defense rise up against Miami? I mean, I know the Dolphins, like the Cowboys, have the glass jaw as far as running into good teams, but still, that was ridiculous what they were able to do to them when they haven't been able to do it to anybody else. 32nd and third down defense, I'd say that's the number one thing they got to work on at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's an interesting kind of yin and yang there with those two teams, how Kansas City's offensive output, you know, kind of obviously fell. Yeah. With their lack of receivers, and we see
they're getting carried by their defense. Yeah. Their defense is carrying them. I mean, who would have ever thought that would be the case?
It's a weird year. It's a weird year for sure.
It definitely is. I mean, you wouldn't have expected to see that. The D'Amico Ryans point, I made this a couple weeks on the show. I think it was at the midseason thing that we were doing with Chris Galloway. And I mentioned at the time here, and I was comparing and contrasting what Houston did to some of these teams out there. The poster child of this stuff to me will always be Mark Davis, as far as going the other way. Mark Davis hiring John Gruden, hiring Josh McDaniels. These imbecile owners that subscribe to the great man theory of history, and they can't identify the great man correctly, versus a team like Houston. You know, Houston with... Maybe D'Amico Ryans isn't the best example of what I'm talking about, because he was a relatively hyped coordinator, but still, he didn't have the cachet on a par with those other two guys. And they bring him in, and it's like, hey, we think this is a guy that can grow into being a really good head coach and somebody that can win and succeed for the long haul. So you look at teams that are doing that, that take a young guy, but they got him because they think he's the right guy, versus Mark Davis, like, oh, let me get a name. You know, another example would be, I talked about this recently on the show with Ben Chu when we were talking about the NBA, this now close to record losing streak with the Detroit Pistons. Well, living here on America's North Coast, I can hear a little bit from time to time of Detroit sports radio. And I remember hearing over the summer some guy ranting and raving, one of the talk show hosts, about there were six marquee guys out there. And five of them are gone, and the Pistons got to get Monty Williams. And Monty Williams, as you know, successful with the Suns, a good team. He was able to take a really good team and take it a long way. Not the last two games of the way, but, you know, halfway towards winning the finals. That's better than a lot of coaches do. But as Ben pointed out, what did he ever do in New Orleans that made you think he's the right guy for a rebuilding situation in Detroit? But got to get him. Got to throw a whole crap load of money at Monty Williams because he's a name, because he's been to the NBA Finals. And that's the whole thing here, too, that D'Amico Ryans, to me, is sort of the poster child for when a team is trying to do it the right way, when they're trying to identify somebody who's a good candidate for their organization and to fill all the roles that they need filled as a head coach, versus somebody that's just, you know, again, trying to win a press conference with a name.
I don't disagree. The counterpoint I will throw at you is Sean Payton, because I will give him this. What the turnaround that he has done with Denver is short of incredible. With they looked at that, they were, I think, what, 1-5, 0-5. They looked like one of the worst teams in the league, and the way they turned it around, I'm going to credit him more than Russell Wilson. I think he came in being like, I got to stick with old Russell Wilson for a year, and then I'm gonna either draft someone or get somebody. But what he's done with that team is nothing short of amazing. I know they're 7-7 right now. They're not world beaters right now. But that turnaround is incredible. And he was one of those names. You know, I know Arizona, we tried to get him. A lot of teams interviewed tried to, you know, brought him in, tried to get him. Obviously, he ended up in Denver. So, I mean, is that an effective counterpoint to your process there?
Sure. I mean, there's an exception to every rule, and you identified one right there. But it's one of those things where it's really, really funny how people can be, you know, a sort of, again, prisoner of the moment as far as looking at these things here, because one of the funniest things, and I bring this up, and again, there but for the grace of God go I, this take could have been mine, and I've had a number of takes that have aged like milk over a period of time, so I'm not bringing this up to clown him, but our good friend and contributor Joe Stazak from Philadelphia here, I remember when the Browns hired Hugh Jackson, it was a thing of like, he was like, we had to settle for Doug Peterson. A team that nobody else was interviewing this guy. You got the hot candidate there. And I'm like, well, you know, Peterson, he's got a good mind. Hopefully he can work out for you guys. And, you know, within 2 years, they got a Super Bowl. And again, it didn't last. But, you know, again, a Super Bowl, that's more than Philly had ever had before. So it's one of those things where when you think something in a moment of like, whether it be the downside of, oh, we had to settle for this guy, or the upside of, look at the name that we got, you know, that's where you can run into issues. Now, as you say, Denver got a name, and he did work out well. But, you know, I would contrast that to in another sport here, who was Michael Malone before he got the Nuggets job? And that was a thing where, again, he has fit in there very well, obviously, and they're a player development success story, to be sure. With everything that they've done there, but there wasn't anybody that was like super wowed when he got the job there, but he was the right guy for the situation, and they're a very, very smart organization, and they knew exactly who to hire. And it's funny because sometimes I think a blind pig finds that, or blind squirrel finds the acorn, because you know, in the case of Denver, what were they bought by the Walmart family or some such? So it was like, who can we go throw money at? And it turned out to be Sean Payton. And lo and behold, it's worked out for him, at least so far.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, while we're on coaches, I think another interesting thread to go down, especially, I think, you know, the playoff teams, we'll see how it all shakes it out, with the exception of a few wild cards. I think we kind of know where it's going to go and what it's going to be. What I think is interesting this year comparative to maybe last year or the year before is it's just kind of a transition year. So when you look at some of the bottom teams that aren't going to be in the playoffs, I'm curious kind of who you see as teams that have a bright future and who is, oh, they're going to be terrible for a while. I think Washington maybe has something. It's going to be interesting. They're clearly going to dump old Riverboat Ron there. But yeah. It's going to be interesting if they either get Bieniemy, if, you know, if the reports are true and Belichick leaves, if he goes to Washington. But I think they have something there. New York, you never know. I think this Tommy DeVito thing is kind of an aberration. Carolina, I think they made a poor choice with Bryce Young. And plus, that owner I don't think is great, but it's interesting when you look at some of the teams this year that are really towards the bottom, because a couple of them I think have some bright futures, but a lot of them I think are going to stay towards the bottom for a few years.
Yeah, I think Carolina first and foremost along those lines, because you know, to the old cliche about a fish rotting from the head, you need to look no further than the ownership there. And I will say, coming into the season, going to pat myself on the back, I thought that Washington was going to be more of a disaster than people thought. Most people thought they were just going to be kind of below average. I really thought they were going to kind of collapse, and they have. And again, they're going to be down for maybe another year or so, because I think Josh Harris is a smart enough guy that, he's on the honeymoon right now. This is the smart thing, is to have a bad year, and even if next year is too. You know, because you believe me, if you're replacing Dan Snyder, you can live off that for a while. But, you know, I think that he'll probably have the right GM and the right coach in place. I don't happen to think that would be Belichick, because I think he's getting exposed right now. But, you know, maybe he'll go that way and things will go less well than I think. Washington hasn't been historically a great place for coaches to rehabilitate their reputations over a period of time, so my guess is it would be a younger guy But Washington, I think they're going to bounce back, but it's going to be a year or so. The Giants, again, as a guy that was a Danny Dimes doubter from day one, I told you so. So, you know, they're stuck with him. Now, I do understand in the offseason, like they limped into the playoffs there, and it was one of those things where, you know, we kind of put them on the spot, right place, right time. Did I think it was a bad decision? Yeah, but did I have sympathy for them? I did, because sometimes you get forced into making bad decisions, as they do. The Jets, I think, again, they've still got a good defense. And, again, you look at the numbers here, third in DSRS, third in defensive yards per play, albeit only 20th in third down defense. But the Jets, I think, are going to blow it up at this point here because they're going to have to. Las Vegas, I just, with some of the contracts they got on that team, I could see them being down for a while. And Mark Davis is going to be enough of a yahoo to go throwing money blindly. There's a perfect landing spot for Belichick, by the way. He can go get paid to go 6-11 there for the next several years. So some of these teams I do think are going to be down for a period of time. I think Chicago is going to be poised to bounce back well. And regardless of what DJ Moore said this past week here about, oh, Justin Fields should still be the guy next year. He won't be. They're going to have Williams because they're going to get the first pick by proxy with Carolina. What an amazing deal for the Bears. And I will just say, too, I think this is emblematic. I was talking about this recently with one of my friends, and I said, Fields will be in a camp next August, and he will be the favorite to win a job. It'll probably be like Fields and Case Keenum or some such. Because, like, we're at a point in the NFL where I guess the last point that I have to make is I think the thinness of the quarterback position, it's a nice crop coming in, and that'll counteract it somewhat. But this crop of quarterbacks, of top quote-unquote quarterbacks, if you had to name the top 10 guys in the league, man, you'd really be stretching like 7, 8, 9, 10. And then you're looking at sort of glorified backups once you get into the teens. It's one of these deals where I just think at this period of time, like guys like Fields, like he'll get a second chance somewhere. And again, he's not your traditional bust. He's not necessarily somebody who through the first 3 years has played poorly across the board. But like you're going to see more and more and more. Unless you're like Zach Wilson bad, you're going to get a second chance, and teams will be looking for somebody like that because not everybody is going to be high enough up in the draft to be able to get quarterbacks like this. Look at Washington this past year. They weren't high enough up, and they didn't want to trade up to get a quarterback. Atlanta foolishly thought they could win with Desmond Ridder, which, again, I called it at the time. That was a load of crap. But you're going to see more and more of this, I think, in the future, that if there's somebody like Justin Fields who wasn't all that his first team wanted him to be but wasn't a complete bust, they will get, again, they may have to compete for their next job, but they're going to have a very good chance to get it because retreads or whatever you want to call them are going to get more of a lifeline because the quarterback supply, the legitimate one here at this point, I think is lower than I've seen it in a while.
I don't disagree. I mean, I think we're seeing the end of the, you know, they're all gone, but the true end of the era with, you know, that stretch of the Mannings, of Brady, of Rivers, of Roethlisberger. I know they've all been gone for, you know, a couple seasons now. I think the difference with this upcoming draft classes, we're going to see it's one of the deeper draft classes we've had in a while, certainly far deeper than last year. I mean, outside of Stroud, Richardson, you know, Bryce Young really hasn't panned out, but I mean, you have a deep quarterback draft class coming up this next year and maybe even the year after. So it's, we're going to see a few more franchise quarterbacks emerge, but no, I don't disagree with you. It really, I mean, outside of the top teams right now, I mean, who really has a franchise quarterback? I mean, LA, we'll see how many more years they get out of Stafford. The Chargers, I'm sure they'll stick with Herbert for a while, but they're obviously going to bring in, you know, new management and head coach and GM, who knows what they do. So yeah, no, it's an interesting point that you bring up. It is kind of really thin at that quarterback level. I mean, part of it's injuries, but yeah, it really is sort of strange to see kind of how the quarterback position, you had those top guys the last few years, and it's really just thinned out. But no, I think you're right. Justin Fields will probably land somewhere. I think he could have a, you know, he might have a good year. I mean, look at what Baker's doing out in Tampa. I mean, Tampa's okay. They have, you know, they still have Mike Evans, but I mean, I think Baker earned himself this year. Whether Tampa wants to keep him or not, I don't know, but he's earned himself a starting job for at least another year, whether it be still in Tampa or somewhere else. But yeah, it's going to be interesting how it kind of all shakes out over this next off season.
Well, exactly, and that's one of those things where, yeah, Baker will be starting somewhere next year, because who could afford, if you're a team that doesn't have a quarterback, who could afford to turn up their nose at him? The depth in the league right now, with the way that it's all just kind of plummeting at this point in time, yeah, that's where, again, so, you know, Fields, I don't think he's going to be in Chicago, but he'll be just fine. He'll land somewhere, and there will be opportunities to be able to get it going there. You may see the same with Kyler Murray if you guys end up looking at your very, very high pick that you're going to have here. If you go in another direction, that'll be, again, I don't think you're going to get much for him. But if he's out there on the open market, certainly he could very well be the favorite to be some team's starter next year.
Yeah, I from what I've read from the beat reporters and everything, and from what the management said, I don't think they're gonna dump him, which I agree with. I think build a good team around him and see what happens. I mean, Kime was such an awful general manager. Yeah. I loved it. Like, you put a Marvin Harrison, you beef up that O line, you give him some more weapons, see what Kyler does. If they're gonna dump him, it won't be this coming up year. It'll be a couple more years. But the backup, I mean, the other sort of good thing about all the quarterback injuries this year has been the emergence of some of these backups that have definitely earned themselves maybe even a starting job. I think Browning will probably go get a starting job somewhere for a team, like you said, that maybe doesn't want to, spend that draft capital on and getting someone. He could end up on a Seattle or New Orleans or who knows. So, and then, obviously the Cleveland's had their ring around the rosy.
Yes.
What, 4 or 5 different starting quarterbacks this year? Obviously, yeah. Flacco will hang out there, but DTR was okay. I mean, and I don't know what they're going to do with this, with the Deshaun situation, but I mean, their backups have played decent enough. I think they'll find a home. Obviously, Indianapolis, Gardner's played pretty well, and Anthony Richardson is clearly showing he's going to be their franchise quarterback for the future. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting kind of how it all shakes out.
Well, yeah, and, you know, Watson, again, they're stuck with him because of the contract. I think to a certain extent with Murray in Arizona, it would be tough to get out of that deal because of the dead money. So that's going to be a factor there as well. But it is funny that one of the quarterbacks that was not part of the carousel in Cleveland this year was Josh Dobbs. And not so much when he was in Arizona, but especially when he was in Minnesota, everybody was like, oh, how come he's not still here? Oh, he should be the starter here. He should be the starter over Watson. And it's one of those things where, and again, getting exposed to where I think he's probably now third on the depth chart in Minnesota. And I love him because I'm a Tennessee Vols honk. But again, he is what he is at this point. And that's one of those things.
What a fun story, though.
Yeah, it's a great story. It's a great story. And I didn't even know. One of my friends told me this. I think FDH Lounge dignitary Anthony Patron was telling me that, like, the reason that he re-signed here, apparently, was because of our NASA Glenn facility that we have.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, that, like, he can tour there anytime he wants. He can just pop in and do whatever down there. I'm like, that's probably the only time that's ever happened in, you know, all of the history of Cleveland professional athletics, of where NASA Glenn was actually a recruiting tool. But, you know, Dobbs is a great story and a wonderful human being. But again, a lot of people were getting out over their skis as far as what he was capable of doing for a while there. It was almost like a more compressed timeline of a Jeremy Lin, essentially. It was like Jeremy Lin times 0.5 for how long it lasted. But, you know, that's one of those things. Now, I'm not saying that Andrew Berry isn't a guy who has, at this point, I would say, probably questionable fetishes as far as getting fifth and sixth round draft picks for guys. I can picture that guy, you know, wearing a ball gag every time he gets a low round pick for one of the players here. I mean, it's like training Donovan Peoples-Jones, again, thank God I'm numb to what they do at this point, and I don't care. I just laugh. But it's like, What was the upside of trading him for a sixth-round pick, especially when this organization was endlessly self-congratulatory about, say it with me, kids, getting him for a sixth-round pick in the first place? and they decide to turn it to ashes, dust to dust, so they can get a low round pick for next year when this team desperately needs receivers that they can count on. So, you know, again, embodying a lot of the foibles of NFL front offices here. But again, getting away with it here. This Browns team here at 9-5 this year, certainly one of the more entertaining stories in the league. No question about it. But as we round through this season here and we get towards the end of the regular season once and we get into the playoffs, I'm sure we'll be catching up with you again. Derek, thank you very much for powering through. Not feeling great here today to be with us.
Absolutely. Always happy to be here. And then, yeah, it was a fun conversation. Hate being sick, but, you know, next man up, and then I am the next man up, I guess.
There you go. very glad that you were able to do it still. A very Merry Christmas to you and yours, Derek. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you, everybody, for joining us for FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1685.